Good morning, counsel. This is the case of Higgins versus Currier. As you can see, six members of the court are here in the courtroom. Justice Miller Lerman is participating by WebEx.
Good morning, Judge Miller Lerman here by WebEx. Thank you.
And she can obviously see and hear you and can ask questions of you just like the rest of us here in the courtroom. When you are not arguing, please keep your masks on if at all possible. When you are arguing, please take your masks off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Does either party have any questions before we begin? Thank you very much, Mr. Wasserberger. Good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court, my name is Corey Wasserberger. I represent the appellant in this matter, Rochelle Currier. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this case comes down to burden of proof. Specifically, whether Mr. Higgins carried his burden of proof to prove that two assets from the marriage were non-marital. The first asset is the interest and growth, which accumulated on the 401k account, which is referred to in the appellant's brief as the 0510 account. The second asset are the sale proceeds from the sale of the Iowa residence, which was sold during the marriage. Mr. Higgins failed to carry his burden of proof at the trial with respect to both assets, and the district court, as well as the Court of Appeals, erred insofar as they found that he had carried his burden of proof with respect to both assets. Ms. Currier requests that this court reverse the judgment of the Court of Appeals and modify the judgment of the district court with respect to both assets, and award her, find that both assets are marital, and award her one half interest in each. Specifically, Ms. Currier requests that this court enter a judgment of $73,092.93 from the 0510 account, which is the value as of March 31st, 2018, and provide that said award is to be subject to gains and losses since that date. With respect to the sale proceeds from the marital residence, she asked that this court enter a judgment for $137,509.90. Under this court's decision in White versus White, Ms. Currier was entitled to a rebuttable presumption that the interest and growth on the 401k account was a marital asset. The White decision was published by this court 11 days prior to the memorandum opinion being posted by the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals decision does not at all speak to the White decision, and certainly the parties did not brief it given the timing. The Court of Appeals' treatment of this 401k account, though, simply does not stand in light of this court's decision in White. In that case, the husband argued that this court's previous holdings under Stevens and the Act of Appreciation cases should have an exception for investment accounts where there's growth or investment decisions made in the management therein. And this court carved out specific ways in which a party could carry his burden to prove that growth during the marriage was due to non-marital passive forces. In this case, there is absolutely no evidence that Mr. Higgins offered regarding these accounts. Ms. Currier was a pro se litigant at the trial. She offered, through Exhibits 13, the definitive evidence regarding the existence of the account as well as the values, both near the beginning of the marriage in May of 2016, as well as right before the filing of the complaint for legal separation in March 2018. Mr. Higgins offered absolutely no evidence to show how the change in the values between those two dates occurred. He failed to carry his burden of proof in the very basic sense of it. It was error for the district court to treat the value of the retirement account as being one of merely the contributions which were testified to during the marriage, and to not show that this difference in value is a marital asset which should be divided between the parties.
What did the court? Oh, excuse me, counsel. What do you mean?
your client was awarded some amounts from 401k accounts, correct?
She was awarded an amount related to her testimony that she believed Mr. Higgins was contributing as much as $1,500 a month to retirement accounts. The judge, I believe it was $21,000, was the math that the trial judge used to say, over this span of time, $1,500 a month, that's a marital asset, and the judge gave Ms. Currier half.
Was that, what does the record tell us about whether those contributions were made to the same account that shows the increase in growth?
The record does not reflect that the contributions Ms. Currier testified to actually went to the 0510 account in the sparse evidence that we have. And that's one of the difficulties with this case. And Ms. Currier's efforts at trial, being a pro se litigant, I believe are laudable insofar as she came with evidence of this account. If you refer to the pay stubs, which she also introduced in evidence, there are entries relating to not only one 401k account, but a second, a Roth 401k account, which we don't have any evidence of other than this pay stub, which Ms. Currier offered. The record which this court has on its de novo review is one that I'm sure to some degree both parties wish they could present more evidence on. However, that's not what this is about. This is about whether this court, on the record that's there, can make an equitable distribution of the assets.
If we can't tell to which account the contributions that your client did receive in the decree went to, how does that cut for our review?
With respect to the 0510 account, it's not necessary that Ms. Currier provided any evidence whatsoever about marital contributions going into that account. The issue of the appreciation of that account, even if Mr. Higgins was, he had testified that there were no contributions that went to that specific account, he would still carry the burden of demonstrating how that growth occurred. It is a difficult thing to see exactly how these pieces fit together. Mr. Higgins was the one who decided not to present evidence on this issue. His testimony about his retirement accounts were notably sparse when he testified that he simply had a account before the marriage and he wished to have it awarded to him. It was his burden to demonstrate whether or not the growth in that account was or was not marital. He failed to carry that burden of proof, and Ms. Currier came to court with evidence of this account and an increase in growth.
I beg your pardon. Of all the options that may be available to this court on this record, what is the relief that you seek?
What is the relief?
Yes. Are you asking this court to run some numbers? Are you asking this court to refer the matter back to the Court of Appeals in lieu of the White jurisprudence or further down the line? What is the option you would prefer? Thank you.
Ms. Currier is not asking for a remand and a rehearing either at an appellate level or the more specifically trial level. Based on the record that's before this court, she's asking for the court to equitably divide the evidence of the assets that were put in the record at trial. The amounts, as I referred to before, a one-half share of the growth in that 0510 account would be $73,092.93, including the gains and losses since March 31st of 2018.
Why should this court do that rather than remand it to ultimately the trial court?
One, whether or not there is enough evidence in the record to give the relief that's sought. Secondly, the equities in the case, insofar as this was not a result of anything Ms. Currier did wrong. In fact, she did what every attorney representing her would do in the same circumstance, to present evidence of what this account is. Mr. Higgins should no more be entitled to a second shot, a second bite at the apple, to reflect different evidence or to try to change what the record is before this court, given the fact he had the opportunity to present this evidence and, for whatever reason, did not. Ms. Currier is in the position of probably knowing there are other things in the case that may have come up differently if she had an attorney. That's not a matter for her to be able to get a new trial on just because she didn't have an attorney. With the record that's before this court on these two issues, both the 401k account as well as the sale of the home proceeds, The question is whether Mr. Higgins carried his burden of proof at trial. And if he didn't, Ms. Currier is entitled to the relief she seeks in this court today and not to have to pay another attorney to go back and retry her trial for a divorce that was not a long marriage, a divorce relating to a marriage which was not long.
If this court was to rework the numbers on the issue that you've raised, would it need to go back and look at the property distribution in total? Do so?
The court does de novo review of divorce proceedings, and the court's able to order an equitable distribution from the record before it. The other pieces which were in the property division from the trial court, one of which, the tax return, which was on appeal but to the Court of Appeals, but not before this court today. There's not a lot of other assets there. This is not going to be a matter of, if the court equitably divides these two assets that Ms. Currier is requesting, that it's going to throw off the balance of the other assets which were in the trial judge's division of marital assets. The trial judge gave Ms. Currier half of what the trial judge determined was the marital estate. Our issue is whether or not the judge correctly determined the extent of the marital estate when making that distribution.
Is there the possibility that we could find that you're correct in your argument today, that when we go back and look at the property distribution as a whole, we say that's still within the boundaries as we set?
This court has the... I see I'm out of time. May I answer the question?
You may answer.
This court has the ability on de novo review to order an equitable distribution in whatever fashion it sees fit. The Davison case is a case which is one example of the Supreme Court ordering a property division which was different than the trial judge, and it reduced the award which the wife received in that case. Those facts and the circumstances for those facts, I believe, answer your question that it's possible. The question is whether or not it's fair and equitable under all of the circumstances. And with what is in this record, with all of the decisions that Mr. Higgins must have made about what to present and what not to present, with the evidence that's in there about what other assets may possibly exist, it is not, on the balance of the equities, inequitable for this court to say, here is the evidence we have on this record, and this is what we are going to order as the equitable division within that framework. The Davison case was a very unique situation in which this court reduced it even beneath a 1/3, 2/3 split for what that wife received. It is the sort of thing that this court has the ability to do. To, if the trial judge said 50-50, this court could come up with a different percentage. This court, though, should look at the balance of all the equities in this case, insofar as this record reflects multiple assets which were not divided or not accounted for by Mr. Higgins, which he owns, as well as the fact that he received the benefit of perhaps some decisions from the trial judge's standpoint, which, again, are not being taken issue with today, such as the tax return, but he clearly received more than one half share of what their tax refund was for, I believe, 2016. The balance of these issues are what should lead this court's determination about what to do with the record before. And Ms. Currier is not asking for a remand. She would request that this court, on the evidence before it, find whether or not the two assets are marital or not marital, and then equitably divide the estate.
Thank you very much. Ms. Shoup, good morning to you.
Morning, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Thank you, counsel. Good morning, justices. May it please the court. My name is Megan Shoup, Greg and Melton and Delaney, and I represent the appellee, Mr. Bill Higgins. Appellant argued to you before this morning that this case comes down to burden of proof, but I would ask the court to direct its attention to what the standard of review was in considering whether the Court of Appeals correctly affirmed the decision of the district court. In looking at the standard of review, the Court of Appeals considered whether or not there had been an abuse of discretion. And in looking at whether a judicial abuse of discretion occurs, the court has to look at the reasons and the rulings of the trial court and whether or not those are clearly unfairly depriving a litigant of a substantial right and denying just results in a matter submitted. And I'd argue to you today that this was a just result, that this was a fair and equitable distribution of property based on what was presented at trial, which is what the trial court had to look at and what the Court of Appeals had to look at in deciding whether or not to affirm. In looking at the cases presented, looking at the facts presented, this was a 14-month marriage in essence. Parties resided together in either Council Bluffs or Omaha from May of 2016 to July of 2017. So we're essentially talking about 14 months in total. And this is a marriage in which one party came in with significantly more assets and significantly more to contribute to the marriage. Generally, premarital property, something that one spouse brings into the marriage, remains their separate property unless an exception is met. The trial court has to then look at what would be a fair and equitable distribution based on the facts and circumstances of each individual case before it. And some of those factors are set out in Nebraska Revised Statute 42-365, in which the trial court has the power to divide property as may be reasonable, having regard to the circumstances of the parties, the duration of the marriage, the history of the contributions of the marriage by each party, and the interruption of personal careers or educational opportunities. And I'd argue today that in light of those circumstances, the trial court made an equitable determination and that the Court of Appeals correctly affirmed that. The ultimate test in a property distribution matter is reasonableness and fairness, and that has to be based on the facts and circumstances of each individual case.
Did the evidence show that the value of these particular assets that your opponent is addressing increased from the start of the marriage to the end of the marriage?
So there's two different issues that have been raised by the appellant in her petition for further review. And looking first at the 401k account, the testimony presented was that that 401k account was a premarital property. And so while it may have increased, Mr. Higgins testified at trial that was due to his continued payroll contributions. He maintained his employment. It's
where did he testify to that?
At trial, I believe it
is. Where in the record?
I do not have that off the top of my head, Your Honor. I believe that it was his testimony, and it was also the appellant's testimony that he made about $1,500 each month as a contribution towards his 401k.
And that was credited to the
correct. And so her testimony was that during the duration of the marriage, she continued to testify to the trial court judge that Mr. Higgins put $1,500 towards his 401k. Her issue with that was that she argued that should have been money that should have been redirected towards her education, that he should not have continued to contribute to his 401k, that instead he should have allowed her to take that money and go to school. And so it's not unreasonable that the trial court judge interpreted her testimony as a request to equitably divide what the contribution was.
She also introduced evidence of the statements of the 0510 account. She showed that it had a value of 200 and some thousand dollars on the day of the marriage, a substantial increase at the end, right?
Correct.
And what evidence do we have in the record that shows that that was the result of passive rather than active appreciation?
Well, there is an issue with the record in that the evidence presented, the statement actually ended in March of 2018. And so it compared a period of time after the parties had already separated. They separated in July of 2017. And so to look at the numbers in March of 2018, it's not entirely clear when that increase occurred.
I don't believe that answered my question. My question was, what evidence do we have as to whether this increase was passive or active?
I don't know that there is evidence in the record that would indicate to that either way. However,
isn't that a problem under our jurisprudence for your client, given that he has the burden of proof on that issue?
I believe that it could potentially be problematic. However, I believe that in looking at what the testimony of the parties was, albeit there may not be significant amount of documentary evidence. Burkhart v. Burkhart said that documentary evidence is not the only evidence that can be presented, that the testimony of the parties can be evidence when the trial court judge has the ability to hear the witnesses and hear the parties and weigh the credibility of their testimony.
So did your client testify that the appreciation was passive and that it came about by market forces only? Did he testify to that?
He did not testify to that. However, the trial court judge in his review of the evidence, of the testimony, and of the documents that were presented, found that it was logical to find that the increase was due to passive forces, that it was not
I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. Is it your position that periodic contributions are the same as actively managing?
No, Your Honor, that would not be my position. In looking at what Mr. Higgins did to contribute to the 401k, if he solely maintained his employment and his 401k continued to be contributed to through his payroll deductions, I would argue that that is not active appreciation.
Isn't that a marital contribution if it happens during the marriage?
Correct. And so what the trial court did was based on what the evidence was, based on what the testimony of the parties was, and what the appellant's request was, the trial court judge found that what would be equitable and fair and reasonable based on the circumstances of this case was to divide the contributions that were attributed to that account during the period of marriage. And so on appeal, the Court of Appeals was tasked with whether or not that was an abuse of discretion to make that such finding. And I would argue to you that that was not an abuse of discretion, that the trial court is within its discretion to make that finding. And so I would ask the court to...
What finding did it make?
It found that what would be a fair and equitable allotment of that 401k to the appellant was half of the contributions during that time, which was in essence what she requested of the trial court judge. She asked for some portion of the 401k.
But did she not also introduce the exhibits showing the increase in the account's value and ask that be divided equitably as well?
She did. She asked for an equitable distribution. She asked for a portion of what the court would consider equitable. And so my argument today is that that's exactly what the court did, that it looked at what her testimony was and what she requested, and it awarded her half of the contributions, which again, she could put towards her education, which is what her argument and her testimony hinged on.
Are you making an argument that's sort of an invited error argument, that she got exactly what she asked for?
I would argue that she received what she asked for, but the trial court did so in a way that it found that it was fair and equitable, that it did not put an advantage to Mr. Higgins because the appellant didn't ask for something specific, or she didn't know to ask.
Did she get everything she asked for?
As far as the 401k account goes, she asked for an equitable distribution of it.
So
my argument would be that yes, she received an equitable distribution of what was in that account and what was contributed during that time. And so I'd ask the court today to consider what is fair and equitable under the circumstances of the parties, and that the trial court judge had the ability to hear the parties, hear their testimony, and weigh their credibility, and that it made a finding that it found to be fair and reasonable given the circumstances, and that there was no abuse of discretion in its authority to do so.
Is it your position that the test laid out in White v. White applies differently when the marriage is very short?
I wouldn't argue that it... I am out of time. May I answer your question?
You may.
I wouldn't argue that it applies differently. I would argue that, as the appellant argues, that the Court of Appeals ignored White v. White, I would argue that that's not the case, that White v. White built on principles that are set out in Stanishek v. Gennetti and Stevens v. Stevens.
You concede that those apply just as much to a marriage of 14 months as it would a marriage of 14 months?
It would, and the Court of Appeals went through the analysis that set out in those cases, and it applied the factors of this case and what was presented to the trial court, and it found that in light of those cases, there was no abuse of discretion. And so I would ask the court in this case to make the same ruling, that there was no abuse of discretion and that the decision of the lower court should be affirmed. And I am out of time, so if there are no further questions, I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. So this concludes arguments on this case for today. Council, thank you very much for being here and for following our coronavirus guidelines. Please, when you leave today, keep your masks on and go out the side door here, if at all possible, and distance yourselves, if at all possible. Again, thank you very much.